This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, between 1 and 2 o'clock on this Thursday afternoon. Coming up over the next hour, we'll be looking back at last night's Carabao Cup action. What a night of League Cup. Many are not particularly big fans of the League Cup, but a pretty special night both at Anfield as well as at Stamford Bridge. Two fantastic games there, as well as in the Midlands at Villa Park. Aston Villa beating their Midlands rivals Wolves by 2-1. So we'll be looking back at all of last night's action in the Carabao Cup, talking a little bit about the draw for the quarterfinals that took place this morning. Our focus also will be on Leicester, who will obviously be in that quarterfinal against Everton in the Carabao Cup after their 9-0 drubbing of Southampton last week. They backed it up with 3-1 win away at Burton to secure that place in the quarterfinals of the League Cup. We'll also be talking about Southampton. How do they react to losing to Leicester by such a massive margin, also then losing to City? Doesn't get a lot easier for them. They travel again to Manchester City on the weekend. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We're also on WhatsApp here on the Premier League Fan Show over the next hour. As I said, plenty to be talking about the headlines. Quite a few of them. The Carabao Cup draw did take place this morning, so we'll talk about that in just a few moments' time. But firstly, let's look back at last night's action. Obviously, on Tuesday night, a number of sides booked their place in the quarterfinal draw that took place this morning. Oxford United, Manchester City, Colchester, Everton and Leicester all secured their places in that draw that took place this morning. But three more places were up for grabs last night. At Anfield, Liverpool took on Arsenal. At Stamford Bridge, it was another all-Premier League tie, Chelsea, Manchester United. And then another all-Premier League tie at Villa Park, Aston Villa took on Wolves. Only one place to start, and what a night at Anfield last night. Liverpool 5, Arsenal 5. Now, you haven't heard that incorrectly. 5-all after 90 minutes. And on this one occasion, even though I'm a massive fan of the fact they've taken it to penalties straight after the 90 minutes, on this occasion, it could have been about 8-all if we'd have had extra time. So we could have had even more goals to look at. Liverpool winning 5-4 on penalties. This game had it all. It had bad moments. It had own goals. It had offsides. It had stunning strikes, it had comebacks, it had penalties. I don't think you could ask much more from a game of football, even though it was the League Cup. And as I mentioned, a lot of people, including myself, I must admit, are not the biggest fan of the League Cup and don't see it as a particularly important competition. But last night was a reminder how great some of the games can be in this competition. Obviously, Liverpool took an early lead through a Skodran Mustafi own goal. No surprise to see Mustafi bundling it into his own net. And then Arsenal came back to then lead 3-1. Must mention there was an offside goal in there. And the only thing VAR actually has brought this season is a clarity with offsides and actually does get it. I mean, I could see from where I was watching on the television that Lucas Torreira was offside. I didn't have to stand on the line to be able to see that. But Gabriel Martinelli scored twice, and Lucas Torreira scored once to make it 3-1. Then it was 3-2 just before half-time. James Milner got a penalty after Harvey Elliott was fouled by Martinelli just before half-time. And then we kind of went into the second half thinking, oh, are we going to see as many goals? My goodness, yes, we were going to see as many goals. James Milner, very unlike James Milner, but simply gifts an opportunity for Arsenal to extend their lead to 4-2. And the craziness just kept unfolding. 4 minutes after that, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain against his former side scored an absolute stunner from 25 yards out on the volley into the top corner. Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain only seemingly ever scores stunners from outside the box. And the craziness continued. Then into just past the 60-minute mark, Divock Origi scored a fantastic goal. A quick turn and spin and then slam it home, although Martinez in the Arsenal goal probably should have done a bit better. Nope, you may have thought the craziness would have ended there. No, it continues on from there. Joe Willock then scores an absolute screamer from about 25 yards out on the 17-minute mark into the top corner. And you're thinking, surely That's the nuttiness of this game over. Nope, once again, mistaken. In the 94th minute, Neco Williams, on his debut for Liverpool at right back, crosses it into the box, and Origi, a semi-bicycle kick, semi-volley, volleys it into the back of the net to make it 5-5 after 94 minutes. It goes straight to penalties. Danny Ceballos misses a penalty for Arsenal, saved by Kevin Kelleher. And then up steps Curtis Jones for the winning penalty. Remember, a local lad, only recently made his debut for the first team against MK Dons in the last round, steps up at the cop end and slams it home. Granted, off the inside of the post, so maybe a little bit of fortune, but what a moment that is. A memory he will never, ever forget, which sent Liverpool into the quarterfinals. An absolutely ridiculous game of football, but one that will go down long in the memory for both sets of fans, maybe for slightly differing reasons. At Stamford Bridge, it was Chelsea 1, Manchester United 2. Two more really good goals in this game. Michy Batshuayi's goal was a pretty good one, skinned Harry Maguire and shot from outside the box. That was a running theme of last night. And Marcus Rashford steps up with a penalty, a free kick from about 30, 35 yards out. Reminiscent of Cristiano Ronaldo's over a decade ago against Portsmouth. I think when you look at it, surely Rashford's is a better free kick because it is from further out. So the goalkeeper, in theory, has got more time to get across his goal. Now, one might say Rashford has probably attempted that about 30 times and it's gone way over the bar, 29 times out of 30. But on this occasion, it flew into the top corner. One thing I did want to point out is that Daniel James is a cheat. That was my biggest takeaway from that game last night. He won a penalty. Marcus Alonso was the man that fouled him. And you could, on the one hand, you'd say he's very clever, and maybe that is true. But he fouls the defender. He just runs into them and then just falls over. And according to referees, that's then given a penalty. I've got no idea why. Manchester United get given an obscene number of penalties, and a lot of them aren't. I guarantee you, if that was Wilfried Zaha, or actually, heaven forbid, one of his teammates, Ashley Young, everyone would be accusing them of cheating and accusing them of diving and saying that that's not a penalty and they're cheating to win these penalties. But because it's a young player, it's kind of seen maybe slightly differently. The other game last night was Aston Villa 2, Wolves 1. Goals from Anwar El Ghazi and Ahmed El Mohammadi won the game for Villa. Patrick Cotrone scored the only goal for Wolves. Carabao Cup draw them for the quarterfinals. Oxford United against Manchester City as per usual. Manchester City getting a nice, easy draw. Manchester United at home to Colchester. Once again, Manchester United getting a nice, cosy home draw. Aston Villa take on Liverpool, which obviously is still up in the air because Liverpool might be unable to play that quarterfinal due to fixture congestion. Obviously, they're playing the Club World Cup at exactly that week when the quarterfinals are supposed to be played. The next time Liverpool have a midweek that's available is in mid-January, and that's after the first leg of the semi-final. So some work to do as to when that's planned for, and Everton take on Leicester. As I mentioned, the crazy game at Anfield in the end worked out well for Liverpool and not so much for Arsenal, who led the game on two different occasions, 3-1, 4-2 and 5-4. But Arsenal did come out on the losing end of it. Maybe some positives for Arsenal fans is that Mesut Ozil seemingly turned up a little bit last night. And on the breakfast show this morning, Richard Lee and Patrick Christie's were joined by Chris Howard from Suburban Gooner. And he started off by giving his views on last night's crazy game at Anfield.
Yeah, well, when you are going ahead at 3-1 and then you're up at 4-2 and then they bring it level at 4-4, but you get that fantastic Willock goal at 5-4, you expect to go and win the game. But it is Arsenal at Anfield and they do score late goals against us, and Unai Emery is a man who doesn't know how to keep a lead.
Could have maybe done with someone like, I don't know, maybe like a Granit Xhaka figure just sitting in front of the back four. What do you reckon?
Provocative. I like it.
What's the latest with that, mate? Seriously, what's the latest from a fan's perspective? He's still not apologised, has he? Will you guys have him back?
Personally, like this is just my personal opinion and a few people that I speak to, I don't really see that he's got that much to apologise for. He was abused quite heavily by a portion of the fans. And I think there's probably mitigating circumstances that you could potentially argue. I think that I've got a sneaky suspicion he'll play this weekend. And I also think that the fans will, it'll almost go completely 180 on it, because I reckon there's probably a few people in the stadium that realise that it was probably a bit wrong to go as mental as some of them did, some of the idiots did. And so I reckon he's going to garner that support. But of course, that only goes as far as his performance. So he'll get that initial sort of support and backing, I think. But if he has another stinker, like he did against Crystal Palace, then that won't last long.
Let's talk a couple of positives. Martinelli and Ozil.
Oh, Martinelli. I love him. He's a bit like Alexis Sanchez. He's a bit like, I think he's a bit like Luis Suarez as well, if you think about the way that he presses the ball. And I think it was Rob Holding last week said that he's an absolute nightmare to play with in training because of that. And he looks like he's got that poacher's finish as well. The weird thing about Martinelli, though, is Emery, and I think he has said that his best position is as a wide forward, but he looks like he's very comfortable as a centre-forward, definitely.
Yeah, he does. And he can head a ball as well, actually. He looks like he's got it all, this kid, seriously. But Ozil did do a very good impression of a bloke who possibly could be in a starting lineup on a regular basis. But he doesn't necessarily show it often enough, does he? He was very good last night, though.
Yeah, he was really good. I think there was a few people that had thought that he wouldn't put in a performance because it's away from home, it's a big team. I mean, you can argue that, you know, there's quite a lot of kids in the Liverpool team and it wasn't the strongest Liverpool team that was out there. But he has done exactly what every Arsenal fan would want, which is give Unai Emery a headache, because we have been terrible in this sort of final third for the last 6 weeks or so, and we've cried out for someone like Ozil, and particularly in those home games like Palace at home or this weekend Wolves at home, they're the sort of games where you'd expect someone like Ozil to dictate. So my only sort of hope with bringing him off on 65 minutes, and Emery's kind of intimated it, is that he'll start this weekend.
He looked genuinely happy. That assist that he did that nearly went out, played for a goal kick, and he kind of drags it back with his foot, ball gets banged in the net. He was then right next to the Arsenal fans, wasn't he? And he looked actually like a kind of lights went off moment, where he'd gone from being quite, you know, dour, I suppose, really, very straight-faced, a little bit like the Jack D of central midfield. And then he just broke and he just started kind of laughing hysterically. And I thought, maybe that's it. Maybe that's the moment where we're going to start seeing full-throttle Ozil again.
I suspect it's more just relief that he's actually on the pitch, to be honest with you. If I'm completely honest with you. I mean, if I was in his position, you know, he just wants to play football. All right, he earns an astronomical amount of money. People can question him and his demeanour. But ultimately, if you've been sat on the sideline not playing football and then you come on, then you're having a really good game, because he was having a good game up until that point as well. He's probably just over the moon that he's actually got on the pitch.
Not so positive, of course, 5 goals conceded. You've obviously got quite a back four with quite a lot of experience, it's fair to say. Just concede 5 goals is pretty disappointing. I want to touch on the goalkeeper as well, because he's one that I saw a lot last season for Reading, really liked him. It was a funny game for him last night, where there's a few that have gone in that you feel like, oh, maybe could have done more without necessarily being hugely at fault for any.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest one for me, which kind of stood out, that I thought Emi Martinez probably could have saved, was that Origi shot from the edge of the box, because it was quite close to him and it was hit with some power. So, I don't know, I guess that's probably, I mean, from my perspective, I mean, I played goalkeeper when I was a kid, not to any kind of level, though. So it's kind of, that's the sort of thing that when you get the top flight, the top flight Premier League goalkeepers, you normally expect them to save those sort of ones when they're that close to the body. I don't know if that's just me being harsh on him, but it felt like that's the sort of thing that you'd expect.
Yeah, yeah. In terms of the back four, Mustafi, thoughts?
I thought he played okay, apart from 2 mental moments, which is exactly the sort of footballer he is. He can play 90 minutes and have 2 stupid moments, and we lose 2-0 or 2-1, and it's him that's the cause of those. So quite why he feels like he needs to slide at every single opportunity is beyond me. It was comical stuff at the beginning, and actually comical stuff at the end, because he shouldn't have given Origi that much space, but he's done exactly that. And as a result, we're out this morning, although, to be honest with you, it's the Man City Cup, so I'm not too worried about it.
Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. One side that obviously will take their place in the quarterfinals. They now know their opponents. They will be drawn away at Everton, are Leicester. And I'm delighted to say we are joined by James Sharp, sports reporter for the Mail on Sunday. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, James. Obviously, that 3-1 win away at Burton has set up that quarterfinal away at Everton. Before we potentially look ahead to that, looking at the team selection, Brendan Rodgers made plenty of changes. There was still kind of that sprinkling of first-team talent. What, obviously, other than the win and getting into the quarterfinal, what else would Brendan Rodgers have learnt from Tuesday night's win?
He would have learnt that the squad is possibly as deep in quality as it's ever been, probably, and has been for a long time. I think a lot of fans would look at this team and think that there's more strength and depth in this squad than there was in the season when they won the title. And he looks, you've got people like Dennis Pratt coming in, who's looking superb. You've got so many players there in that team who are also banging on the door for the first team. In previous seasons, there's been a very much a first team and almost reserves split in terms of quality. And you look at them and go, well, yeah, they're getting a run out in the cup, but you can't really see them banging on the door for the first team. Whereas you look at the team that played last night and you on Tuesday, and you go, yeah, there's players in there who, if they put in a good performance in this game, there's no reason why they can't be playing in the first team. There seems like there is much more of a blend of quality across the board now, which I think will probably be the main thing that Brendan Rodgers takes from it.
So Leicester will play away at Everton in the quarterfinals. That will be kind of a middle of December in a very busy period. I suppose, firstly, what do you make of that draw from a Leicester perspective? And two, do you think that, especially as that's going to be a very congested part of the season, do you see Brendan Rodgers going with a very similar approach in terms of team selection? Or because you get closer and closer to that final, will he be tempted to potentially play a slightly stronger side?
I mean, it's really interesting because over the past couple of seasons, when Leicester have got to this point, the manager who's been in charge has put out has stuck with the same in terms of giving lots of fringe players a go. I know this time around it might be slightly different because, as I just said, the quality among the squad is probably better now. So those the fringe players, if they get put out again, would be a stronger unit. But the managers who put out weakened side before were heavily criticised then they got knocked out for not going full out for the trophy. So that is something that Rodgers will have to bear in mind. But as you say, it will come in a hugely congested period where Leicester are now also looking to nail down a top place. So whether that will take priority over reaching the semi-final, I'm not quite sure. The fact is, Everton could have been a worse draw. I mean, it could have been Man City again for the third season in a row, or Liverpool, Everton away. It could have been a lot better. They could have got one of the lower league teams who are still in the competition. But I still think Leicester will look at that and go, this is a game where we can win this. They'll view it as a real opportunity to get to a cup semi-final. And I think that's right. Everton are a club that are struggling at the minute. There's a lot of uncertainty surrounding the manager, surrounding the way they're playing. I think it's a great opportunity for Leicester to progress. The interesting thing, as I said at the beginning, will be what team he picks and whether fans think it's strong enough, whether he should rest players, whether he should give those players a go, or whether he goes, no, this is a great opportunity to win a trophy. The club wants to win a trophy for the late chairman. That's been a real goal since that. So that will be the interesting thing that we see.
I wanted to get your views, James, on a namesake of yours, James Maddison, who everyone seems to be talking about at the moment, not necessarily always for on-field reasons. Obviously, he scored again on Tuesday night, a nice comfortable finish to make sure it was a more comfortable ending to that game. Just how good is James Maddison? If we kind of rank him, I suppose, amongst other Premier League midfielders at the moment, creative midfielders, In my opinion, I'd say he is right up there amongst the top, I think probably top four or five creative midfielders in the Premier League. How highly do you rate him amongst other Premier League midfielders?
Oh, exceptionally highly. I think he is, the fact that he's got more chances than any other Premier League player since he's been here is testament to that. What he offers is ability to take the ball on the half turn and immediately open up angles to play through, and he's really exciting, mainly because he is the kind of player that England haven't really produced many of them, and haven't seen that kind of style for a long time. So I think it's frustrating when certain Leicester fans, they see him not given opportunity in the England team as yet, in the squad, yes, but in the team, no. I think he's exciting, and I think it's two things. He's got someone alongside him in someone like Yuri Tielemans, who is just as creative, just as classy. The two of them in that Leicester midfield is so exciting for fans to see, and those two turn Leicester from a team that just kind of passes the ball sideways and likes to keep the ball but can't do much with it, to a team that can hold the ball and can pick apart defences, where Leicester previously in the past have struggled against teams that sit back and just put in a deep block. Maddison can pick the ball up and he can pick gaps, he can find gaps, and he can also bend them in from 25 yards. He's superb, and I think from the Leicester fans' point of view, they just want to see him get the recognition that he probably deserves on the international stage.
Next up then for Leicester, James, is in a trip away to Crystal Palace on Sunday. Leicester obviously made an impressive start to the Premier League season, but how tough a test is that going to be at Selhurst Park on the weekend?
Exceptionally. The Palace are basically Leicester's bogey team. The Palace have won their last four Premier League games against Leicester, and the aggregate score, I think, is 13-1, and that's pretty grim. And Zaha has scored in his last three Premier League games against Leicester. He loves it against the Foxes. So, if there's any team that's going to stop this really good run of Leicester, it's Palace, because the recent record is atrocious against them. However, they do go into this with... They seem to have built up this winning mentality throughout the squad, through the Premier League and obviously we see now in the Cup, where all of these players, they've got into the habit of winning. They know what it takes to win games. They are doing that now. And you hear lots of coaches talk about winning being a habit, and once you get on a roll of that, you understand how to see out games and you know what it takes to get over. And I think Leicester have got that now. So it's going to be unbelievably tough. But I think just feeling what Leicester are at the minute, I think they'll have too much for Palace, even though Selhurst Park is an unbelievably difficult place to go.
Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, James. That was James Sharp, sports reporter for The Mail on Sunday, talking all things Leicester. They're talking up James Maddison. Leicester have a quarter final in the League Cup to look ahead to, away at Everton in the middle of December. And up next, a trip to Selhurst Park. And as James said, it's been Leicester's bogey side over the last few years. If you feel like Leicester are going to find it tough on Sunday, or are they going to or is it going to be plain sailing for them? Call us on 0208 70 2558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. How good is James Maddison? Is he amongst one of the top three potentially best creative midfielders currently in the Premier League? For a side that were absolutely annihilated by Leicester last Friday night, Southampton. Obviously, they lost again this midweek, not quite as dramatically against Manchester City in the Carabao Cup. Where do they go next? It's back to the Etihad for round two against Manchester City. We'll be getting Southampton perspective next.
This is Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. We'll be talking all things Southampton now. I'm delighted to say we're joined by Ben Stanfield from the Total Saints podcast. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Ben. It's been quite a tough week in particular for Saints fans. In midweek this week, a 3-1 loss away at Manchester City in the Carabao Cup. Ralph Hasenhüttl, the manager, did praise the reaction of his players. What did you make of the Saints on Tuesday night? And were there positives to take after what was a pretty horrendous night on Friday night last week?
Yeah, afternoon, Kieran. I guess, you know, the manager probably was in a bit of a no-win situation after last Friday night. I think, you know, we all expected probably to lose at Manchester City. They're obviously a good side, despite the number of changes made. But I think probably if he had come out and critiqued them again, you know, particularly as individuals or as a team effort after that, then, you know, confidence would have been even more shot. So I guess he has to try and protect them a little bit. From a Saints point of view, I think there were some encouraging signs. I think the frustration probably was that by the time we started playing and actually giving it a bit of a go, you know, we were already 3-0 down and it was game over. But I think Alex McCarthy did a good job in goal coming in. Angus Gunn's been under quite a lot of criticism the last few weeks. And I think at centre as well, Kevin Danso, Jack Stevens has probably given him something to think about as well. So, as I say, I think in a game like that, you know, as a fan, you want to progress as far as you can in the Cup. I don't think we did ourselves justice personally, and I think we could have played a lot better. But I think the fear for is if they took the game to Manchester City, Kieran, it probably, as we all know, could have been 9-0 again, I think.
Do you think that one of Southampton's biggest problems at the moment is, from my point of view looking at it, I think that there's an uncertainty as to the formation that Southampton are going with. Sometimes Southampton play with a back three, sometimes they play with a back four. Is that because Hasenhüttl doesn't quite know exactly what best suits his side? Or is it the fact that when you're losing games, it's inevitable to change things up and you're just trying to find or stumble upon a solution?
I think it's probably a bit of both, isn't it? I think, you know, when teams get into the flow of winning games, they have a set pattern. You tend to see managers change their ups a lot either. So you think of sort of Leicester. I mean, they're obviously flying at the moment. They've had quite a settled side season. I think with Saints, you know, it's probably a bit of both in that he's trying to find a solution that will sort of stop this rut. I think that's the most important thing. Before you can even think about winning games, you need to think about keeping clean sheets, trying to sort of build from there. But I think also he's probably been frustrated by, and it goes back to what we've spoken about quite a bit, Kieran, and you know, other Saints fans will have as well, that some of these players I don't think are good enough to take on board and execute the instructions that he's wanting. And for that reason, I think that's meaning that he then has to go to option B, to option C. And by that time, they're sometimes 2-3, you know, 4-0 down and it's kind of game over. So, as I say, I think it's a bit of both. But, you know, I dare say the manager is scratching a lot at the moment.
I'm sure one of the frustrating things for Saints fans is this injury to Moussa Djenepo. Now, I believe he's on his way back and could be involved potentially this weekend, if not in the very near future. He's a player that's shown glimpses this season of a potentially really good player. I think you may have said it, Ben, or somebody else, another Saints fan has said he reminds you of kind of Sadio Mane when he first joined Southampton before making the move, obviously, to Liverpool. How frustrating has it been not to have a player like Djenepo fully fit at the start of his Saints career, and how quickly do you think, once he's back, he'll get back up to speed?
Yeah, I think it has been frustrating. I mean, he's probably only played 3 or 4 games this season, and both games we won, away at Brighton and away at Sheffield United, he obviously got the winner at Sheffield United. He scored the first goal at Brighton, so he has been crucial. I think it's important that we don't put loads and loads of pressure on him, but, you know, the results speak for themselves, and I think he's been, you know, an asset that shows some ability up front that we probably need to try and get back in the team. Whether they're going to risk him at Manchester City this week or make sure he's fully fit for Everton next week, which is obviously a lot more winnable, I think will be interesting to see. Saints have seemed to have decided since the 9-0 mauling that we're going to radio silence in terms of press coverage and all that sort of thing as well. So whether we will know if he's fit for the week or not, but I think Hasenhüttl's been keen to make sure that he doesn't rush him back here. And so it'll be interesting to see. But, you know, if we're going to start picking up results again, then we're going to need players that goals and win us some points.
After the drubbing, obviously, on Friday night, it was perhaps a refreshing story to see that the Saints players gave up a day's wages and gave those wages to charity following that performance. Does that potentially show you that obviously everyone to do with Southampton would have been absolutely devastated after what happened on Friday night? It just went from bad to worse, and it was Halloween before it even happened. So are you happy to see that these players know or perhaps have an understanding of how much the football club means to its fans and how much it means to the community, and actually acknowledging, rather than just being in their own bubble of earning lots of money and not really kind of going home and not really thinking about it, they've actually understood how hurt Saints fans would have been after that game, and have that sense of understanding with the fans.
I mean, footballers and football clubs get a lot of criticism in this day and age, don't they? It wasn't nice that scenario came about the way it did, to lose a 9-0, but to do something like that, admittedly it's the football club's charity, so it is bolted onto the side of the football club, but it's still money that they wouldn't necessarily have gotten. You know, whether it needed a gesture like that, I don't know. I think, and you know, all you want is for players to get out on the pitch and you know, do better in the next game. Actions speak louder than words, don't they? And it's, you know, footballers, and there's been lots of over the years talking a good game, but they don't necessarily deliver on the pitch. So for me, that's the most important thing. Obviously it's good for the charity, but I think the most important thing, Kieran, really is, out of all of this, forget the fans, forget the football clubs, as players, you know, they let each other down as well, and I think it's important that they start to realise, as a football team, yeah, we can shout and scream and have a boo and a moan and all that sort of thing from the touchline, but they need to be representing each other to the best of their abilities as well. That's the only way they're going to get out of this. They can't be looking around at each other and saying, well, I'm not going to put the effort in because he's not putting the effort in. You know, what they need to do is pull together and, as a football team on that pitch, start motivating each other to deliver. So, you know, if they do that, they will start picking up results, and then we won't need to have the conversation about charity donations and all that sort of thing, because the way it's going at the moment, Kieran, Saints Foundation are probably going to earn quite a bit more money this season.
Do the Saints fans, Ben, still have complete faith in Ralph Hasenhüttl? Because he came in at a point where it was quite clear, kind of for quite a long time, that they needed a change. Mark Hughes wasn't getting it done. They needed a fresh approach, and you could argue Mark Hughes didn't really ever do much for Southampton except keep them up. Hasenhüttl has come in, he's added a sense of charisma and energy to Southampton, but as of recent times, the performances, the results haven't quite been there, and Southampton are kind of languishing in a dangerous area. So do Saints fans still have, or does Hasenhüttl still have the full backing of the kind of Southampton faithful?
I think the way that we're looking at it, as you say, I mean, we've had some pretty average managers the last couple of seasons, Pellegrino and then Hughes and things like that. You know, my view with Hasenhüttl is he's definitely made some interesting decisions this season in terms of formations and lineups, as we've discussed, and substitutions and that sort of thing. But, you know, he by his own admission, is learning in the Premier League as well. And, you know, we need to understand that you don't get time in football, and if the results carry on the way they are over the next month or so, you know, his position may well become untenable. But as a fan, Kieran, the way I'm looking at it is, who would we go out and potentially get that is going to do a better job than Ralph Hasenhüttl at the moment? For me, if we go out and get a Big Sam or something like that, you know, it's just an admission of failure that we've just given up on the model and we're not looking to play a particular style, that sort of thing. So I think, you know, we're still early in the season. I mean, there's, what, 10 Premier League games gone. It's not a great picture at the moment, but a couple of wins, admittedly, you know, it's going to be hard to get those. You're back up the league, motivation and confidence will grow. So I think he's got to be given a bit more time. I certainly would stick with him, but I think he needs to be, you know, a bit more self-aware in some of the decisions he's making. Some of the players that he's maybe stuck by, I think he needs to think about swapping a few others in and giving them a chance as well. So kind of learning from his mistakes. But for me at the moment, Kieran, I don't think we would get anyone that could do a better job with this group of players.
I know it's still a couple of months away, but obviously the January transfer window is always a period, kind of a key period in the Premier League season for those sides, in particular in the bottom half of the table, that are worried about getting relegated. And even though you might have to pay a little bit more money for players, it's still a time that you can go and potentially make a couple of signings. If it were up to you, if you were in charge of the club, Ben, who would you be looking to do much business? And if so, where would you be looking to improve it? Because obviously you're not going to necessarily be able to make wholesale changes, but if you had to make small tweaks, where would they be?
Yeah, I think it's a sort of heart and head thing, Kieran. From a heart point of view, absolutely, you want to make changes, you need to, and you kind of fear where Saints might be by the time January comes if we are going the way that we are. But, you know, in terms of heart, absolutely, we need to get, you know, certainly one, if not two defenders in. We need an experienced leader back there. We've lost Jose Fonte, Virgil van Dijk, people like that over the years that were organising at the back. We don't have that. Everyone's seen how fragile Saints look defensively. The problem from the head's point of view, Kieran, is the money side of things. It's easy to say, go out and invest and spend 20, 30 million. Saints don't have the money to do that. They've blown all the Van Dijk money on players like Guido Carrillo, Mario Lemina, Wesley Hoyt, people like that. Where are those? They're all out on loan because they're no good for us and people won't buy them. So the issue we've got is we've got all these players that are currently on the books, either currently still at Saints or out on loan. We're paying their wages and things like that. And until we get rid of them, there's not really money to spend. So I think, as I say, I'd love us to be able to go and buy players in January, but I'm not sure what capabilities Saints will have unless they're prepared to take a few risks.
One of, I'm guessing, very few positives this season has been the form of Danny Ings, who scored 6 goals in all competitions so far this season. How positive has that been? And are you confident that Danny Ings is the man to lead the line for Southampton up front?
6 goals in this team, Kieran, probably feels like 25 at most, I think, to be scoring that amount of goals. So he's done well. I think the challenge with Danny Ings, as you know, we've spoken about and other Saints fans will talk about, is keeping him fit, keeping himself fit, sorry. And I think if he can do that, then he will be a real asset to the team, because goals, as we all know, win matches. I think the challenge really for him is the service. You know, Saints are obviously lacking in confidence. Every week they seem to be sort of, struggling a bit more. And it's the service to him to be able to score the goals is the biggest query as well. But I think, you know, as we said, he's a Southampton lad. You know, he wears his heart on his sleeve. He's proud to pull on the red and white. And I think even through the tough 2 or 3 weeks that we've had, you know, he's been someone that's still been a 7 or an 8 out of 10 and has sort of warranted his place in the side. So I think there's other people that should be looking at themselves a lot more closely than Danny Ings, and hopefully he can keep it going and start pushing us up the league.
And just finally then, Ben, it doesn't get a lot easier for Southampton. They've already made one trip to the Etihad. It's another to take on Manchester City on Saturday away from home. What's the main thing? Obviously, you would like points from the game, but yep. What's the main thing that you would like to see from your boys on Saturday?
Yeah, I think, what you want to see is you want to see heart and soul. You want to see them trying for 90 minutes. You know, I think everyone knows that they gave up against Leicester. And for me, you know, that's not acceptable as a fan and, as I said earlier, as a player. So I do fear the worst still for Sunday. I mean, we're not going to turn the corner instantly. So I think if City turn on, you know, like they did against Watford a few weeks ago, it could be as bad as it was last Friday. I think there's no getting away from that. But what you want to see, if it is 3-0, 4-0, 5-0, whatever, that Saints players are still chasing around, they're putting in a tackle. And I mean, that was one of the frustrations from Friday night, Kieran. I think we made 3 fouls in the whole game, you know, and when you think we gave a free kick for away for the 8th penalty for the ninth and Ryan Bertrand's red card, that's your 3 tackles. So what have we done for the rest of the night? We've basically not put a tackle in. So I think at the very least, you want to see Saints players given 100% from 0 minutes to 90 minutes, and whatever the score, you can feel as a fan that they've given their all.
Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Ben. That was Ben Stanfield from the Total Saints podcast. Remember, you can listen to the Southampton Fan Show here on Love Sport tonight between 10 and 10:30 p.m. So Saints fans out there hoping for a miracle on Saturday, you can catch the Southampton Fan Show here on Love Sport every Thursday evening tonight, 10 till 10:30 p.m. If you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. We're going to be reacting to more of the Carabao Cup action after this.
Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp, so make sure you get in contact with us this afternoon. Obviously, 3 games in the Carabao Cup last night. Liverpool 5, Arsenal 5. Yes, you heard that correctly. Liverpool winning 5-4 on penalties. Chelsea 1, Manchester United 2 with a pretty sensational Marcus Rashford free kick. And Aston Villa 2, Wolves 1. The draw for the quarterfinals, Oxford United against Manchester City. Manchester United play Colchester United. Aston Villa take on Liverpool and Everton take on Leicester. As I mentioned, Manchester United won at Stamford Bridge by 2 goals to 1 last night, including that sensational free kick by Marcus Rashford. And on the Breakfast Show this morning with Richard Lee and Patrick Christie's, they were joined by Manchester United football writer Sam Pilger, who also is a contributor to the Manchester United Fan Show here on Love Sport every Sunday evening. He started by giving his views on last night's win in the League Cup at Chelsea.
I thought the performance was very good. I mean, obviously, two weakened sides. I mean, I think Chelsea weakened even more than United, and probably United were. It was a game they should have won. Really, they had the stronger side, and they did. They did. There's a bit of a momentum building. It's funny how these things can happen. The Liverpool game was the sort of people were saying that could be the final blow for Solskjaer if they lose heavily to Liverpool, but instead they should have won that, came away with a credible draw, and that's been three away wins on the bounce after that. So things are improving.
It's funny, isn't it? Just the, I mean, we talk a lot on this show about the mental aspect, the psychological aspect, where sometimes it just takes one and then it can start a bit of a cascade. Because it looked for a while they were struggling so badly away from home. Now, all of a sudden, there does seem to be a little bit of belief in the squad. Has anything changed over the last few weeks, do you think?
Well, I think you said, I mean, as you're right, confidence. I think he's dabbled with three at the back as well, which he played yesterday, three centre-halves and two wing-backs. That's obviously had success last night. I think, you know, Williams has come in and played with that sort of fearless approach. You know, other players, Chong and Gomez, have come in and done okay, but there seems one youngster who wasn't so hailed who's come in and really taken his opportunity. And some are saying she'd almost start over Luke Shaw. McTominay has grown in stature. The loss of Paul Pogba, who's probably going to be out for another month, is not as big a deal as it seemed to be. So there are a few things that are coming together. I should caution, though, the wins were over Partizan Belgrade and Norwich, looking destined for relegation, and a heavily weakened Chelsea side. So, you know, it's a good start, something to build on, but, you know, a far tougher task will lay ahead.
I guess it's a case of not getting carried away. You touched on Paul Pogba there, because I guess you look at the United side and what Solskjaer's trying to build. Does Paul Pogba fit into the culture of what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's trying to build?
Well, I suppose the easy answer is to say, well, I think Solskjaer wants him. I mean, Solskjaer is frequently said he wants to build the team around him. In terms of the culture, I mean, there's two Paul Pogbas. There's one that seemed to be the sort of arrogant and agitating to move away, and one, you know, behind the scenes that is seen as a team player and has the respect of his teammates and is popular within the club. It is popular within the club with staff and players. You know, there's an easy narrative building now that, oh, United's done okay without him. And I think the bottom line is he wants to move. That's quite clear. He wanted to move last summer, the summer before that. You can understand why, since he's come back to United. He's won the Europa League, the League Cup. They've done okay, but he's not played in the Champions League. He's won the World Cup while he's been at United. But he's a player who seems like, unfortunately, feels like he's slumming it and wants to move on. So in terms of the culture, I think Solskjaer would like to keep it, but any player who wants to move away is not good for the culture. So it's a difficult one, really. I sort of hedge my bets there, really. But he could come back and make a major impact and be offered a new contract, but likely he could also come back from his injury in December and go through the motions looking for their exit.
Yeah, indeed. A quick word on Rashford. Of course, you know, fantastic finish last night, and of people likening it to Cristiano Ronaldo's. If anything, it might have been even slightly better than Cristiano Ronaldo's. He seems to have found a bit of form as well.
He has, absolutely. I mean, again, things can turn around quickly. I thought, you know, the Newcastle game a few weeks ago with that defeat, he looked like he was running on empty. People said he needed a rest. You know, more dramatically, people said, oh, he clearly wasn't good enough. I mean, that's ridiculous. He's just turned 22 today, and has been brilliant for United for the majority of 3.5 years, and is a long way from his peak. I mean, it is funny, again, with the free kick. I don't have the statistic. I wish I did, but he has hit a lot of free kicks, and they've got nowhere near the goal. That one he hit sweetly. He has a moment that, like you say, like the Ronaldo one over 10 years ago, that will be replayed over and over again. But, you know, his conversion rate is pretty terrible. So if that starts to improve, that'd be even better for him.
Quick word on Daniel James as well. Of course, won the penalty last night and has a knack of winning penalties, it's fair to say. He gets himself in the box, obviously great control. He does look like the signing of the summer so far.
I would imagine, and I thought that even United have been surprised at the impact he's made. I mean, this was a player who had played virtually every single game of his career in the Championship for a struggling Swansea. I think United saw a player there with potential at 15 million. He was worth a punt in a summer where 15, 18 million were being spent on Wan-Bissaka and Maguire. He was more of a squad player that would be eased in gently. Well, you know, he looks utterly at ease in the Premier League, and has become, you know, arguably United's best player this season. So he's been a real surprise that he has come on as quickly, because he didn't start. The first game of the season against Chelsea, but then he came on and he scored, and that's almost set the tone for the season. Yeah. Ease him in gently, few substitute appearances, and he said, "No, I'm too important. You can't move me." And in a season where a lot has gone wrong for Solskjaer, that's probably gone right.
And a word on Harry Maguire. How do you rate his performances so far in a United shirt? If you were to give him a rating out of 10 so far, how's he done?
I think maybe 7, room for improvement. I mean, I think last night, I mean, you were asking me in the morning after he sort of beaten twice by Batshuayi. Wasn't great. I mean, it was a very good goal. Sometimes you've got to say, well, that's a great goal. But again, it seemed to be a bit of a mistake. There were about 2 or 3 United centre-halves around him. He got beaten. It seemed to get Maguire get beaten twice. But overall, I think it's probably followed the path that it was expected. I think United had to spend 80 million on and break the world record for a defender, because he was better than any of their existing centre-halves, and I think he has played better than any of United's centre-halves they had last year. He has improved the defence. But I think you probably expect more from an £80 million defender, and that will come. There's certainly room for improvement, but he has improved the defence, but he's got some room for personal improvement, I would say.
Yeah, and lastly, a Fred McTominay in midfield, which isn't exactly, or you wouldn't think it'd be the long-term future. That being said, McTominay certainly is showing big signs of improvement, and he's looking more and more like the real deal. Fred, maybe not so much. Does that concern you a bit?
Well, strangely, the two of them really came into their own in the famous PSG away win when they played together in midfield. That's probably Fred's best game for United. Also played well in the first leg against Barcelona in the quarterfinals. But yeah, I mean, Fred is a bit of an enigma, really. I mean, you know, that United signed off spending £52 million on him, a huge amount for a central midfielder, Brazilian international. I think there was maybe some hope that he'd follow the same path as Fernandinho, who obviously another Brazilian who came from Shakhtar Donetsk, but obviously they're poles apart in terms of quality. Yeah, that is a concern, that the scouting department signed off a £52 million cheque for Fred. He's been overall quite average, and there's a wonder what he does. You know, he doesn't score goals, he doesn't set up goals, he's not a fantastic pivot player. You know, what does he do really well? So, you know, I think there's, you know, talked about room for improvement, huge amount from him. But McTominay, you know, again, he almost like James, you know, the weakness of the United squad has given him more opportunities, and he's grasped them. I think he looked an absolutely fantastic player, and there was, you know, it shows the value in being patient, because I think under Mourinho, when he started getting his starts, people were a bit like, well, what does he do? And sort of they were unfavourable. Rather than people said that, you know, he's like Darren Fletcher.
Yeah.
He didn't offer much. Maybe because they're both Scottish. I don't know. But he's certainly come into his own this season. He's added goals. And he looked, there was an image of him last night directing more senior players into their positions and geeing everybody up. And I think, United probably only scratched the surface with him.
That was Manchester United football writer Sam Pilger, who also is a contributor to the Manchester United fan show here on Love Sport every Sunday. You've joined Richard Lee and Patrick Christie. Remember, you can catch Love Sport Breakfast every weekday morning from 6:30 until 10 a.m.
This is Love Sport.